Hello and welcome to the Leadership Hub, brought to you by Global Leadership Initiatives. GLI is a Canadian-based leadership development organization with over 22 world-class expert consultants who specialize in leadership, sustainability, management, coaching, and team development. GLI strives to create excellence in leadership globally by offering individuals and organizations holistic tools and programs that enable them to develop their leadership and their business capacity. For more information on our programs and services, visit www.globalleader.ca. Now, let's dive into today's episode. Hello, and welcome to the Leadership Hub. It's great to have you on this episode. We are continuing in our African Leadership series as we lead up to GLI's release of African Leadership, Powerful Paradigms for the 21st Century. And today I have the two incredible authors from chapter 2 of the African Leadership book. I have with me Eunice and Edward Okoto. Hi, guys. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode.
Hello.
Hello, Megan.
So I was wondering if you guys would just dive in and give us a quick background on who you are, what you do, let our listeners know about your background.
Okay, so Megan, thank you for having us. My name is Eunice Victoria Okoto. I am Associate Professor of Public Management at Henderson State University in Arkansas, United States. Originally from Ghana, West Africa, I call myself Ghanaian American. So in a nutshell, I'm an educator. I do consulting and I serve also in some leadership roles. So as an educator, I teach nonprofit management, grant writing, budgeting, and other public management related courses. I also, as a consultant, I've worked with several public and nonprofit agencies within the community, training them on public sector initiatives, as well as board leadership development and training, among others. As a Carnegie African Diaspora Fellow, I've had the opportunity to go back to Ghana to give back, helping Ghanaian universities through curriculum development, research, and women empowerment and leadership training. Some of my leadership roles include leading as outreach director of my church. I'm a vice president of recently elected, actually, president-elect of Global Awareness Society International. And then also serve on a few editorial boards and a local nonprofit. I'm a board of director helping with strategic planning, among others. So the question is, what are the motivation for this paper? Having led through a few leadership initiatives and having seen Africa as it is, our original place of born, the motherland, there is this common knowledge that the African continent is endowed with many resources and it also houses the youngest population comparatively. But at this poorest people on earth with high inequality. So seeing all of this, you realize that the problem of Africa is really a leadership problem. So as scholars, we wanted to contribute to this dialogue to help provide some recommendation as to how this leadership problem can be solved so that African can take back what and where it belongs. So I partnered with my colleague and my partner, Edward Okoto, Professor Okoto, and Bawale. Justice Bawale is the dean of University of Ghana Business School, to be able to do this. So Edward will introduce himself.
Hello, so I'm Edward Okoto, professor of business management, also at Henderson State University. So I teach business courses. So I come to this with a business perspective. I teach business courses, international business, and evidence-based management. And so my research also focuses on that area, attitudes and work attitudes in a different context, in different cultural context. So recently, my research has refocused my research towards leadership, and particularly leadership in Africa, management in Africa, because I'm also African born, so we have that interest to see Africa succeed. So that is the genesis of it. I've had the opportunity to research and publish in so many different outlets and different forums, present different forums. And so that's part of my background. And as with interest in Africa, I have the opportunity to go to Ghana through the Carnegie Africa Diaspora Program and, you know, give back, you know, in curriculum development, research training, and so forth. And recently, I went back as a Fulbright scholar. So I just returned from my trip as a Fulbright scholar for about 10 months, you know, in Ghana. So that is part of my background.
That's incredible. Thank you guys so much for sharing. So you guys have both kind of touched on the theme of this chapter, but I want to read a quote from the book where you say the nation states of Africa achieved independence, hence political emancipation from colonial rule decades ago, but have struggled to achieve economic emancipation. And the question is why? And I feel like this quote really just sums up the whole gist of this chapter and the movement of it. So my first question for you is, you take readers through the story of political emancipation that many African countries went through, emancipation from colonial rule. And I was wondering if you could just, for our listeners, take me through how and when did a lot of this political emancipation take place?
Okay, so many of the nations of Africa started gaining independence from mid to late 50s to 1975. These were led by some of the great emancipators that we list in our book and some of the achievements of those emancipators. So that is basically the period, if I may say so, mid to late 1950s and the 1975. Now, if we talk about the how, then we are looking at the nationalist ideas that these emancipators took, mobilizing for political gain, mobilizing to fight for the people, mobilizing to make sure that people are emancipated from colonial rule. Basically, if you talk about the how, that's what we'll be talking about. I want Edward to add to it.
Yeah, so in my view, during that period, they had a moral compass. Their moral compass was to fight for freedom. So their mobilization leadership was focused on achieving freedom for its people. That was the focus of that mobilization, political mobilization. And so that was very useful in achieving, you know, in propelling and achieving independence for African states.
Absolutely.
And then the process was marred with a lot of violence, political turmoil, widespread of unrest. But then leaders started, you know, garnering their power to be able to rule the people. So emancipation politically has taken place. Now, what do we do going forward?
Yeah, that's a great question, because you kind of touched on, you know, the achievement of power and how that was led. Edward, I like how you mentioned that it was the moral compass of the leaders that was the force behind that mobilization. But obviously, and this is maybe something that people are more familiar with on the African continent, is the dark side that African leadership can take on. So there's this other great quote where you say, despite their marvelous achievements, the political emancipators had their weaknesses, the dark side of African leadership, which persists today. So what are some of those dark sides that we do see in African leadership?
Right. So generally in the leadership literature, the literature has shown that there's a dark side of leadership, which more or less leads to some of the negative tendencies of leadership. So if I want to quote, according to the writer by Judge et al. In 2009, they identified three attributes: hubris, Machiavellian attitudes, and narcissism. So these are some of the attitudes of leadership that leads to the dark side. Now, looking at Africa, we can see that two of these attributes are key: hubris, which is becoming overconfident, and then Machiavellian, that is people who are more towards personal power. And that's what we see. So the emancipators, they were very good in mobilizing people to achieve independence. Then after independence, what happens? They started using their mobilization processes to try to perpetuate themselves in power. And so some of them, because they were successful in achieving independence, they felt that they were the only people that were capable of leading their countries. So it led to that, you know, that overconfidence and the need for them to you know, mobilize to keep themselves in power. You know? Yeah. So if I may give some examples, like people like Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana, and after independence, his process tried to establish a one-party system, you know. You know, example like Mugabe, you know, did well for Zimbabwe, but what happened? Stayed in power for long, didn't feel the need to hand over power. So you can see this, the dark side of, you know, that portraying African leadership. So that is, we see that that's perpetuated up to this day.
Yeah, it reminds me the dark triad that you mentioned. It's funny how closely that is tied to sort of, it's the dark side of the coin of the hero leader. You know, the heroic leader sets everyone free and that's amazing. But then the dark side of the heroic leader is that, you know, once they're in power, if they don't stabilize that and learn to share that, then the heroic leader very quickly becomes a negative sort of paradigm to lead from. What if someone...
And the narcissistic part of it, they become so self-involved, self-loved, and arrogance sets in. So we don't see that part of leadership that wants to serve the people.
And that's like, you know, that's a core component of democracy, right? Leadership for the people. So once you lose that, it's a What are some of the impacts that you guys have identified in your research of these dark sides where we have in the African story, so many of these incredible leaders who led the liberation movements and then that kind of transitioning into one-party systems or rulers who just stayed in power for such a long time. What are some of the impacts that we've seen on the African continent as a result of that style of leadership?
So like I mentioned, because of that style of leadership, they've become so self-centered, self-focused. Many people come to power just to garner some resources for themselves and their families. So that means that people are neglected. It's just that one time, vote for me, I will give you this quid pro quo kind of leadership. So they get what they need and they sit in power and all they're doing is taking care of themselves and maybe their little nuclear family. And then the citizenry are left uncared for. So that selflessness is really impacting citizens and communities in various ways. Now we see economies completely going down because somebody is not taking that responsibility. If Africa can utilize all of its resources effectively, I don't think we will be seeing pictures on TV that tells us that a child is going to sleep without food, right?
Yeah.
So those are some of the self-centeredness of our leaders, and the impact is inequality. The impact is poverty. The impact is inability of people to, and they go to the negotiation table with the of the populace.
So to take it to the other side, so I think, you know, the negative side is what we're trying to portray in this chapter as you know, inability to achieve economic emancipation, economic freedom. That's the part of the negative side, because with leadership has not been focused and leadership has not been in tune with the new form of environment that we are in, the change that is going on. And so we are not able to progress, develop our nations, you know, to achieve the economic independence that we desire.
Yeah,
and one huge thing for most African nations is that because of that self-centeredness, a government comes to power, they do what they can do, they leave it right there. There is no succession of power where continuity comes in to be able to continue with projects that a previous government has even started. So we describe most of these things in our VUCA context in the paper.
Yeah.
In the chapter.
You, Edward, you've touched on this idea of economic emancipation. And I know, obviously, the economic struggle of the African context is such a multi-layered issue. It's not something that you can blame on any one specific source. But before we kind of move further into this discussion, I was wondering if you could define economic emancipation for us.
Okay. So when we talk of economic emancipation, we are talking about the ability of nations to mobilize their own human and capital resources for economic development, to raise their own capital for economic growth and advancement. So in a nutshell, you're looking at a state of economic advancement and empowerment and the freedom from controlling external institutions and nations over their economic decisions.
Okay, well, that's a really comprehensive definition. It really helps to kind of understand what it would mean for a country to become economically emancipated and how powerful that is to not be reliant on outward sources to kind of mobilize their citizenry. So you've mentioned one of the possible barriers to economic emancipation on the African continent, and that being the loss of the servant component of leadership, where leaders have kind of stepped into that dark side of the heroic leader by becoming very self-centered. But what are some of the other potential causes for this lag in economic emancipation that we see in the African continent?
Well, I can broadly say it, and probably Edward will come in.
Go ahead.
In a broad sense, you're talking about the kind of leadership we have. And that's what you mentioned earlier. We saw that pre-independence and probably after independent-ish, we talked about leaders being mobilizers. They were strong. They used a strongman approach to be able to get what they need. But that strongman approach is obsolete. That self-centeredness and self-focused approach is obsolete. But that it seemed like that's what the nations of Africa continue to use. And because of that, we are lagging behind in economic emancipation. You want to add to
that? Yeah, so to add to that, I would take it from the perspective of context. So the context in which leadership operated pre-independence was different. And then post-independence, the context is different. So I think one of the causes is that leadership needed to transition itself to change from the post, you know, pre-independent leadership style and attitude, and to after independence to reimagine leadership. I think that's what we haven't been able to figure out to do. And so that's what this chapter kind of goes into. So I think that's one of the causes, you know, the context, being able to identify the current context, what we are in, and how leadership is supposed to, you know, to lead. I think it's part of the public cost of inability to achieve that economic emancipation.
And so in the chapter, we go into a little bit more detail using the VUCA concept to delineate what exactly it means for the African context. And I think readers will appreciate how we have separated them out, volatility, uncertainty, and all of the those other factors, and how Africa fits in. And more importantly, talking about how it links to the sustainable development goals. This context we are in requires a little bit more different approach to leadership. And unfortunately, Africa is lagging behind because we haven't identified these contexts to be able to move forward with.
Yeah. I like too how there is such a powerful leadership lesson in this as well, because often we fixate on the personality of a leader and your approach, you know, like you're mentioning the strongman approach and how, you know, it's the approach that's really gonna just fix the problem or make you an incredible leader. But a huge part of powerful leadership is actually being extremely context sensitive.
Yes.
Possibly even knowing when, if you have a certain leadership approach, having the ability to see your own hubris and think, maybe if I'm a context sensitive leader, I see that this context actually doesn't suit my style of leadership best, and it's time for me to actually pass it on to someone else. You mentioned the VUCA context, And Edward, you also mentioned how one of the issues is that the leadership context has changed, and it's the lack of adaptation to that new context that is kind of contributing to this economic lag. What are the sort of some of the unique challenges, without giving away that whole section of the chapter, what are some of the unique challenges that the African continent and African leaders in particular face in a VUCA context? Because obviously it's different in every context.
Yeah, so we classify that as being complex and complicated. As the leadership context in Africa is complex and complicated. Now, Africa as being part of the world, we face economic and technological challenges, disease pandemic challenges. I've just seen through COVID. These are issues that you know pertains around the world. But when it comes to Africa, we also have unique challenges that, if you look at the SDGs, some of these can be identified within the SDG challenges. So on top of all these economic and technological challenges, then you add on top of this some of these SDG challenges. That makes the context very, very complex and complicated. And so that's why we go into the view that this context requires different form of leadership. And so our view has been that the political mobilization paradigm of leadership has to give way to maybe adapting some of the organizational science leadership models. And that's where I come from a business perspective, looking at organizational science models, how that can help, you know, political leadership to be successful.
Mm, absolutely. So there's this quote, it kind of goes into what you're saying, the organizational science and maybe how it's time for leadership in the African continent to kind of transition to adopting some of these ideas. And the quote goes, the question is, how could current and future leaders manage in this environment, referring to the VUCA environment? What skills and capabilities are necessary for the new crop of leaders who must usher in economic emancipation within this complicated environment? And so you mentioned two broad categories of these capabilities that could usher in this new era. And those are the management of the corporate nation and the nascent capabilities for political leadership. You mentioned these both as means for tackling the VUCA context that African leadership faces. So what are these two different capabilities, these two different broad categories of capabilities, and how can they guide African leaders forward?
Yeah, so I think thank you for that question. That's very important. So adapting the organizational science model of leadership, and so we look at it from two perspectives: managing the management side and the leadership side. Now, if you take a very simple description of management activities, it goes into planning, organizing, controlling. The fourth one is leadership. So you can see that leadership sits on top of these three tools: planning, organizing, controlling. And so that's where we go into. We believe adapting these principles is going to help us. And so we use the word corporation, with the assumption that we can view the nation just like a corporation. Mm-hmm. And so there have to be a planning aspect of it. When we look at African countries, plan. So that is the management aspect. If we say that we want to achieve economic freedom, economic independence, we want to achieve economic growth, we have to have a plan that leads to that with an action plan. And so that's what the management aspect comes in, having a plan, an action plan that leads to development. And then, of course, the leadership side, as we already mentioned, the context, the VUCA context. So what are some of the things that we need these days, you know, in leadership, like value-based leadership, then also the skill side. In the past, it used to be okay to just have maybe political science background, have a law background, have economics background, and you are good to go into political leadership. But what we identify is that because of the context, there are additional skill set that are needed beyond these backgrounds, like being creative. Mm-hmm. Creative leadership is very important.
Yeah.
Being like a change agent, because we live in an environment where change is a constant. So leaders have to know how to deal and manage with change. And of course, having a compounded challenges, it leads to what we call crisis. So leaders have to know how to manage, you know, crisis. So these are some of the skills, the new skills that we think that leaders have to acquire to be able to be successful, to, you know, to move countries forward.
So basically, in a nutshell, we're saying that the I alone can fix it type of leadership will not work for the African complex situation. What we need is collaborative leadership, servant leadership, a change agent, as well as a crisis manager type of leadership to be able to move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've discussed sort of this, the skill set that leaders need. And I love how you mentioned it's such a simple perspective shift, but to just take that step of thinking of a nation as sort of this ambiguous political entity and actually just taking that step over and saying, no, we can actually just treat this like a corporation and we can have all the systems in place that a corporation would have in place. It suddenly feels so much more manageable and so much more systematic. So that's, I love that perspective shift. But moving into the leadership side is maybe where it becomes a little bit trickier, because how do you teach that skill set? How do you teach that that mindset shift? And that's my next question for you, is how can leaders help the African continent begin to shift from a mindset of self-preservation alone, which kind of ties into the, you know, the strong man who wants to just gather resources for himself. How can the African continent shift from that to a mindset of positive change, where it's not just we're surviving, it's actually that we're moving forward and we're progressing? Because that's more of an intangible shift that needs to take place. How would you recommend that leaders contribute to that perspective shift?
Yeah. So that's quite a challenge. Yeah, and we notice that. So, in our view, I think it has to in one way, one form, have to start with our leadership curriculum development. What we teach in our institutions about leadership, and being able to teach some of these contexts and teach the usefulness of this type of leadership. It could also come from maybe helping political parties as they training their followers. You know, now leadership, fellowship is very important. Most often when we talk about leadership, we tend to forget about the fellowship. Mm-hmm. So fellowship is very important. Developing followers and then allowing leaders to share power with them, that will also be part of it. So developing followers is very important. And political parties can do that. We have political parties, you know, that have their own manifestos and their leaders. They can tap into this and develop their followers, you know. So that is, and that, but that requires the willingness of the political parties to take this on. There's need for us to create awareness. So I think maybe with this chapter and with this book, that awareness will be created on the continent of Africa that, hey, we need to start focusing on this value-based leadership that is more servanthood than, you know, the hubris and the Machiavellian type of leadership that we had. So I think with this process, hopefully we might be able to get that mindset change in an up and coming, you know, leadership on the continent of Africa.
And we do have examples. In our chapter, we give some cases of what other African nations have started doing, for giving example like Paul Kagame of Rwanda. Not everybody agrees with his process, but at the end of the day, they did work. Mm-hmm. It worked because the people mindset changed. They began to change their attitude towards leadership, mm-hmm. learning from the leader. The leader began to build his followers. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, we see that the country that went through genocide is now becoming the hope of Africa. So these are some of the things we need to learn, especially when it comes to building our followers. Some followers just follow because they have to follow. Mm-hmm. So how do we educate people from the classroom, for example, knowing that you have the power to vote the person that you think have these leadership qualities that will help the nation move forward? Those are the kinds of things we need to take from the grounds up. So hopefully this chapter will begin to create that awareness in our classrooms as well.
I love that shift as well, because even when we speak, you know, in the leadership development space, often we're speaking to leaders or about leaders. But even if you are a leader, you're definitely also a follower somewhere as well.
Yes.
And part of being a leader, I suppose, like a sort of perspective shift there is leading by setting the example of good followership and responsible followership, you know, being mindful of who am I voting in? Am I using my voting power responsibly to vote in people who will bring positive change? I love exactly. that. That's uncommon. We so infrequently think about the fact that even when we're leaders, we're also followers. And how are we setting the example of followership? I like also how you've mentioned, I think it's important to remember as we speak about African leadership and the dark side of it and the lag in economic emancipation, when you bring up examples like Rwanda, just to reiterate though, the capacity and the capability that there is in the African continent to achieve that kind of positive change. Because even at its core, the strongman leader, you mentioned this at the beginning, Edward, how the liberation movement, it was always led by leaders who had this strong moral compass. And that to me is the spirit of African leadership, where there's this incredible power in that moral compass, where it really does have the ability to transform a followership, transform a nation even, which is such a powerful thing to keep in mind. And that kind of brings me to our final question that I want to ask to each of you is, as you guys have, you know, researched for this chapter, and I mean, you gave your introduction earlier, you guys have been connected with leadership work relating to the African continent for a while. And you both, you know, had the opportunity to go back and go back to Ghana where you are from and give back to that beautiful country. So what for you personally is the most valuable lesson that people listening, whether they are African nationals or wherever they're from, what is the lesson that we can draw from paradigms of African leadership?
personally, or maybe as a form of concluding this discussion, I would say that the pre-independence paradigm, basically paradigms of the pre-independence leadership, where people use the political mobilization, I mean, those were great. But post-independence, if we continue to use that, we have to shift that towards the positivity. Most of that created a lot of unrest, and we cannot continue to use that when we want to build an economy. We want to focus on a political leadership that is not at the expense of economic leadership. We need mobilization for economic emancipation, a new mindset for new leaders for building the nation. In my own perspective, I think as we begin to think towards a paradigm shift towards economic emancipation, the narrative of Africa must change. We need to change from thinking about disease and wars and begin to change our mindset towards that of hope, aspiration, and opportunity. That is very important to me when we talk about.
For me personally, what I've gained from this is about participatory leadership. That is what I take mostly. That, you know, wherever I find myself, that is something I need to practice. Participatory leadership. Because that is what can get us out of the challenges that we are in. Because there's no one person, the challenges that are coming to us, the changes that are coming to us, they are enormous. They are so much vast that there's no way one person can say that I can handle everything that comes to us. So participatory leadership for me is my takeaway point. Also, through this research, going through this and researching, what we realize is that some of the things that we are kind of proposing are actually not new to Africa. Yeah. And that we say that some of these things has been practiced, but just that they haven't been consistent. Mm-hmm. So if we can identify some of these, you know, useful practices that you know, that has been part of African ideology or, you know, practices, I think we can just continue to adapt these and then make them, you know, more successful. So that is part of, you know, part of my takeaway for this.
That's amazing. Thank you guys both so much for sharing that with me and sharing that with our listeners. And I want to thank you both for your time, for coming on the show today and just speaking to us about your chapter and just the incredible insights that we can glean from it.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Leadership Hub. Don't forget to follow Global Leadership Initiatives on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. And we'll see you next time.